in the cafe as well. Well, let's turn in our Bibles to 2 Chronicles, chapters 25 and 6. Title of our study, Amaziah and Uzziah. Quick question, how many of you know anything about Amaziah and Uzziah? Well, a few, that means you read ahead. We'll start here. Last time we looked at a kid named Joash. He became king at 7 years old, and he reigned for 40 years. So, interesting as we look back, because here we have kids, very young, some of them, worshiping the Lord, singing to the Lord, serving and growing in the Lord. And we look at a king who was only 7 years old when he became the king. Now, we read of him. He did what was right in the sight of the Lord all the days of Jehoiada the priest. And of course, this reminded me that our influence on our children, that your influence on the children that you minister to here in the church, and I know many of you minister, the children we minister to, in our jobs, there are lots of public school teachers here in our body, and I'm so grateful for everyone because they're out there where it's not so easy these days to live for the Lord and rightly represent the Lord, and we have many who are doing just that. Well, the sad truth was after Jehoiada died, Joash listened to the counsel of fools. It led to idolatry and judgment both for him and the nation. And it's a reminder to us that, well, we need a close personal relationship with God. And we need to make sure our kids enter into a close personal relationship with God, because our influence over them will last for so long, but ultimately they will be out and beyond it. And the people they listen to in that day will, in fact, well, have a big part of who they become and how they live and what they do. So the idea is we're not just trying to conform ourselves or our kids to act a certain way here or around us. We want to see a real transformation of their hearts and lives so that wherever they are, they know right is right and wrong is wrong. I think last time they sang for us, they had a song that said right is right and wrong is wrong. I think that was them. Could have been some other kids' choir. But in any case, even the best of examples, and this goes back to why we need to make sure every child connects personally with Jesus, and why we week after week encourage you to make sure you've connected personally with Jesus. Even the best of examples can falter, can stumble, can fail. And all of the best examples will ultimately either get old and die or go some other way because we just live for a season. Well, his son is next up to bat. Chapter 25, verse 1 says, Amaziah was 25 years old when he became king, and he reigned 29 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jehoadan of Jerusalem, and he did what was right in the sight of the Lord, but, and we've learned that whenever something good said and the word but appears, for the most part, it's not going to be so good what follows, but not with a loyal heart. Like his father before him, he started well. And again, we're given insight into his weakness. He did what was right. He obeyed God's law, but he did it with a divided heart. Now, God has a prescription for a divided heart. He says we need to love him with all our heart and all our soul and all our might and all our strength. Love him with all that we are. If we do that, well, we're going to be just fine. Now, everyone has at least one area of weakness. And I don't want you to start thinking about people you know well and say, hey, one, are you kidding me? It's like when someone says, you know, I love you, and you say, because you've heard it, well, what's not to love? And they're like, I got a list, right? There's a lot not to love. But here's the thing. All of us have that area that we're weak in, and we need to be very wise and very cautious, once we realize, hey, this is an area where I could stumble, where I struggle. Samson was able to take on whole armies. He wasn't afraid of the masses of men, but he was taken down by one evil woman. And listen, it wasn't all her fault. I'm not trying to excuse her. No, she was a mess. But the deal is, he lusted after her. And if he had seen her and realized, hey, that's not the gal for me, as I'm sure his mom was saying and his dad was saying, hey, that's not the gal for you. Well, in any case, he was conquered because of his lust for a woman. And in Proverbs 7, verses 21 through 27, the Proverbs are very clear in this area that one woman, one wicked woman, has taken down many strong men. With Judas, unlike Samson, it wasn't sex, it was silver. He was greedy. And interestingly enough, he was the disciples' trusted treasurer. And yet we know he was a thief. And when you hear these stories about how Judas really wasn't what we think he was just tricked or duped, that's completely ridiculous. He knew what he was doing. He was a thief from the start. He was greedy. And when they offered him 30 pieces of silver, he sold the Lord for 30 pieces of silver. So Samson, sex, Judas, silver, we're going to see that each of these guys, and unfortunately it's a theme that is woven through all of 2 Chronicles, each of these guys has their Achilles heel. They have that thing. With Joash, it was that he relied upon another man instead of connecting directly and personally with God. And because of that, well, when the leader he followed was gone, well, then he followed others. Now with Amaziah, he did what was right, but not with a complete or with a loyal or an undivided heart. Jesus said, no man can serve two masters. He will either hate the one and love the other, or else he'll be loyal to the one and despise the other. And then he says something that lots of us don't understand. He said, you cannot serve God and mammon. It's actually a good translation because we don't know what mammon is. So we're like, okay, well, I'm not into mammon. Mammon's just money and all the stuff it brings. Why doesn't the Bible just say that? I have no idea. They just want us to look it up, apparently. But once you do, you realize in a culture that says stuff is everything, that working hard, and what's the real goal of higher education? Not to be a deeper thinker or to be wiser or any of that. It's to get a better job so you can make more money and have more stuff or better stuff. And I'm not saying, hey, there's a problem with higher education. Well, there are some problems, but mainly with the people teaching. Not all of them. Certainly, we have some great and godly teachers. Even in this fellowship, we have great and godly teachers teaching at the college level. And that's a lot harder to find, by the way, than down in the grammar school level or junior high or high school. But again, we see a man who did right. People watched him and they could say, hey, here's a guy who's really living it. But his heart was divided. Well, we see what happens in verse 3. It happened as soon as the kingdom was established for him. He executed his servants who had murdered his father, the king. However, he did not execute their children, but did as it is written in the law and the book of Moses, where the Lord commanded, saying, the father shall not be put to death for their children, nor shall the children be put to death for their fathers, but a person shall die for his own sin. Amaziah began well. He executed justice on the men who murdered his father. This was absolutely appropriate. It was absolutely biblical. But here's the unusual part. He showed mercy to their children. I say it's unusual because historically, if you go back, you'll see when there was a dynasty that was replaced by another, or especially if there was intrigue and somebody came and wiped out your father or your family, well, you're going to go after theirs. Why? Because there's always the danger that those children will grow up and then they will come after you for taking out their dad. And so what happens here is he realizes there could be a threat. He's got to be that wise. But he applies a biblical principle, demonstrating his confidence in the faithfulness of God. He trusts that if he does what God's word tells him to do, that God will bless him for his obedience. I had to tell you, God is always faithful. When we do what he tells us to do, we will find that he is right there making sure things work out. Well, moreover, Amaziah gathered Judah together, set over them captains of thousands and of hundreds according to their father's houses throughout all Judah and Benjamin. And he numbered them from 25 years old and above, found them to be 300,000 choice men able to go to war who could handle spear and shield. His father had been a worshiper. He repaired the temple. He was mostly about worship. Amaziah, he is a warrior. And so while his father prepared the temple, Amaziah prepared for battle. He also, verse 6, hired 100,000 mighty men of valor from Israel for a hundred talents of silver. But a man of God came to him saying, O king, do not let the army of Israel go with you, for the Lord is not with Israel, nor with any of the children of Ephraim. But if you go, be gone, be strong in battle. Even so, God shall make you fall before the enemy, for God has power to help and to overthrow. If you're newer to a study of 2 Chronicles, you need to know that at this point in Israel's history, the kingdom is divided. 10 tribes in the north, 2 in the south. The northern tribes retain the name Israel. In the south, it's Judah. And at this point, Israel is apostate. They're worshiping idols. They're serving the gods of their imagination. And here what the king of Judah is doing is he's thinking, well, we're related to them. We're 12 tribes. We're all sort of the same. One big family. So what's wrong with hiring some of them to go to war with us? Well, to his credit, when the prophet comes and says, listen, you don't have to listen to me, but you know, you go on out there and the Lord will make you fall before your enemies, because God has power to help or to overthrow . Well, anyway, his alliance with the northern kingdom was putting Judah at risk. What was the risk? Suffering their judgment. So God sends a prophet who warns Amaziah and reminds him his strength is in the Lord. And to his credit, Amaziah says to the man of God, verse 9, but what shall I do about the 100 talents which I've given to the troops of Israel? He's got a very practical question. He's like, I already paid these guys. What do you want me to do now? And the man of God answered, the Lord is able to give you much more than this. He just says, just let it go. Send them away. Let them keep the cash. God will multiply it back to you. By the way, when you get to the New Testament and you get into 1 Corinthians, there are some interesting challenges regarding lawsuits, you know, Christians suing one another. And Paul's take on all this, he says, wouldn't it be better just to be defrauded? Do you think it's right to take your business in before the courts? You're going before the unbelievers and fighting with one another. And he's just saying, man, that should never be. And the point is, all we have comes from God in the first place. And he can take it away so many different ways, and he can multiply it to us at any point. And so he just tells them, listen, don't worry about what you've invested. Don't worry about what's going to be leaving. Just know God is able to multiply all you have and all you'll ever have. So Amaziah discharged the troops that came to him from Ephraim to go back home. Therefore, and this is sort of one of those unforeseen consequences, their anger was greatly aroused against Judah, and they returned home in great anger. He obeys, and they leave angry. Now, I was thinking about this, and if you really spend a little time on it, you realize, hey, these guys got a great deal. They got paid in advance. They were told they don't have to fight, so they're not risking anything now. And they're just like, let's just go home and spend the money, you know, spend some time with the family. But these guys came to fight. And they decide, well, if we're not going to fight with you, we'll fight you. And that is, in fact, how this ends up. Well, Amaziah strengthened himself, verse 11, leading his people. He went to the Valley of Salt and killed 10,000 of the people of Seir. Also, the children of Judah took captive 10,000 alive, brought them to the top of the rock, cast them down from the top of the rock so that they were all dashed in pieces. But as for the soldiers of the army, which Amaziah had discharged so they would not go with him into battle, they raided the cities of Judah from Samaria to Beth-horon, killed 3,000 in them, and took much spoil. So what's happening now is we have a civil war. Happens in different seasons with different kings, but you have the northern tribes fighting against the southern tribes. At first, the northern tribes just tried to entice the southern to join them and worship with them. Now they're actually attacking and fighting against them. Well, it was so. It was so after Amaziah came up from the slaughter of the Edomites, he brought the gods of the people of Seir, set them up to be his gods, and bowed down before them and burned incense to them. Here we have it, see? This is the guy who did right in the sight of the Lord, but not with a loyal heart. He had a divided heart, and it plays out here as he brings idols back from the battle. And the irony of this cannot possibly escape us. The idols couldn't do anything to protect those they just conquered. And he brings them back anyway and begins to worship them. And the prophet comes. Verse 15, the anger of the Lord was aroused against Amaziah. He sent a prophet to him and said, why have you sought the gods of the people which could not rescue their own people from your hand? It's a good question. If these idols were worth worshiping, why didn't they help the people who had them before you? These idols were impotent, just like the idols that were worshiped by Pharaoh and by the people in Egypt. In fact, if you go back to the Exodus, and it's a story most of us are familiar with, but one you should be very familiar with. Every judgment fell against some localized god. As he judges the Nile, they worshiped the Nile itself, and he turns the water to blood. They worshiped the, and who knows why? I mean, they worshiped frogs, and you know the story. He said, oh, you want frogs? Here they are, you know. Worship as much as you can and enjoy it. But the point is, one after another, he showed their gods not to be gods. And here you have a king who's doing well, and he's fighting, and he's winning, and the prophet comes, and he listens. But in this case, so it was, verse 16, as he talked with them, the king said, have we made you the king's counselor? Cease. Why should you be killed? In other words, he doesn't care that the Lord has sent this guy. He's just saying, hey, I didn't appoint you or ask you to come, and I'm not interested in what you have to say. You want to die? So the prophet ceased, and I like this, it says, the prophet ceased and said, I know that God's determined to destroy you because you've done this and have not heeded my advice. In other words, you're rejecting God's counsel. That's the real issue. Threatening the prophet, well, that often happens. But he says, just one more thing, as the king says, don't say another word. He goes, okay, I'm done. But just one more thing, as he's leaving, I'm sure now God's going to destroy you. How do I know? Because you've not heeded my advice. Well, Amaziah, king of Judah, asked advice, sent to Joash, son of Jehoahaz, the son of Jehu, king of Israel, saying, come, let us face one another in battle. Then Joash, king of Israel, sent to Amaziah, king of Judah, saying, the thistle that was in Lebanon sent to the cedar that was in Lebanon, saying, give your daughter to my son as wife. And a wild beast that was in Lebanon passed by and trampled the thistle. Indeed, you say you've defeated the Edomites and your heart is lifted up to boast. Stay at home now. Why should you meddle with trouble that you should fall, you and Judah with you? We have a little bit of trash talk going on here. And basically, having conquered the Edomites, he calls Israel's king out and says, let's go at it. And Israel's king just says, listen, you know, that would be a foolish move on your part. But again, Amaziah would not heed, for it came from God that he might give them into the hand of their enemies because they sought the gods of Edom. Now, God really warned him three times. He warned them from the very beginning not to make idols or bow down to idols or worship or serve idols. Then when they ignored the law of God, he sends them a prophet, and they ignore the prophet. And now he sends them the king from the north who says, listen, what you're doing is not going to work out for you. And some are confused by the fact that it says Amaziah would not heed, for it came from God. In other words, this was what God wanted, is how some read this. That's not suggesting this was God's perfect will for his life. But having decided to reject God and worship idols, God just says, well, all there's left for you is judgment. And the penalty falls not on God, because, well, it says all this happened because they sought the gods of Edom. Well, Joash, king of Israel, verse 21, went out, and he and Amaziah, king of Judah, faced one another at Beth Shemesh, which belongs to Judah. And Judah was defeated by Israel, and every man fled to his tent. Then Joash, the king of Israel, captured Amaziah, king of Judah, the son of Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, at Beth Shemesh. And he brought him to Jerusalem and broke down the wall of Jerusalem from the gate of Ephraim to the corner gate, 400 cubits. And he took all the gold and silver and the articles that were found in the house of God with Obed-Edom, the treasures of the king's house, and hostages, and returned to Samaria. And Amaziah, the son of Joash, king of Judah, lived 15 years after the death of Joash, the son of Jehoahaz, king of Israel. And the rest of the acts of Amaziah, from first to last, indeed, are they not written in the book of the kings of Judah and Israel? After the time that Amaziah turned away from following the Lord, they made a conspiracy against him in Jerusalem, and he fled to Lachish, but they sent after him and killed him there, and they brought him on horses and buried him with his fathers in the city of Judah. Interesting, his father was murdered by his own people. Now he ends up being killed the same way. Joash, and that's where we began, a follower of men. His son Amaziah, a divided heart. And now his son Uzziah is up to bat. All the people of Judah took Uzziah, who was 16 years old, and made him king instead of his father Amaziah. He built Elath and restored it to Judah after the king rested with his fathers. Uzziah was 16 years old when he became king. He reigned 52 years in Jerusalem. His mother's name was Jeholia of Jerusalem. Why can't anyone have a normal name in these things? There's no Ben or Jerry, or there's no Ben and Jerry's. But he did right, and here we have it, the first of two summaries of his life, and take note of it. He did what was right in the sight of the Lord, according to all that his father Amaziah had done. Now that would be great if his father had only done well. But it says he did everything his dad did, and it turns out that that's going to be true. However, he's not a follower of men, and for the most part, it's not about idols. No, he's a guy whose heart is going to be lifted up with pride. In fact, look down at verse 15. We're going to come back and at least read down to this point. But here's the heart of his fall and his failure. And in verse 15, the latter part, it says, his fame spread far and wide, for he was marvelously helped till he became strong. God showed himself strong on his behalf until he himself felt strong enough to take it on his own. But when he was strong, verse 16, his heart was lifted up to his destruction. Here's this man's Achilles heel. As he began to look at himself in the midst of all God was doing, he began to imagine somehow he was responsible for God's victories. And his heart was lifted up to his destruction. Well, back in verse 5, because we got to at least read down and we'll see what happens in between. He sought God in the days of Zechariah. Sounds similar to his grandfather, who had understandings in the visions of God. As long as he sought the Lord, God made him prosper. Now let me just say, that's true for every one of us. God blesses us when we do good and when we're not. Why? His rain falls on the good and the evil. God blesses because he's a blessing good God. But when his own people begin to turn from him, we can't expect him to prosper and bless that. But as long as we're seeking him, we can be sure he will make us prosper. It doesn't mean, by the way, as some would like it to mean, it's those words we like mammon, we don't know what they are and don't want to know, and then prosper. Well, we know what that is and we prefer it to be a certain kind of prosperity. No, the reality is that prospering us might be entirely spiritual for some of us. God might not make us healthy. God might not make us wealthy. God might not even make us wise. But he will bless us and use us and prosper us. And he does it in the way that will be most beneficial to those around us and bring the most glory to him. So he went out and he made war against the Philistines and broke down the wall of Gath, the wall of Jabne, and the wall of Ashdod. And he built cities around Ashdod and among the Philistines. He prospers, first of all, in battle. And when you understand that the battle belongs to the Lord, when he tells us to put on the full armor of God and having, you know, taken up the sword of the Spirit and the helmet of salvation, all that he's provided for us, take up prayer. In the midst of that, he says, you can be sure you're going to conquer. So they're fighting physically. We're in a battle spiritually. We want to armor up. We need to take the weapons of prayer and the word of God, and then we need to go out into battle. Well, God helped them against the Philistines, verse 7, against the Arabians who lived in Gur Baal, and against the Mennonites and against the Ammonites who brought tribute to Uzziah. His fame spread as far as the entrance of Egypt, for he became exceedingly strong. Now, this just might be a warning that all of a sudden everybody's talking about him and all of a sudden he's really something. And it's always dangerous when everybody's propping you up and talking highly about you. And well, he was succeeding. Why was he succeeding? God was prospering him. But, well, that prosperity, as we're going to see, became a stumbling block to him. Uzziah built towers in Jerusalem at the corner gate, at the valley gate, at the corner buttress of the wall, and he fortified them. He built towers in the desert. He dug many wells, for he had much livestock, both in the lowlands and in the plains. He also had farmers and vine dressers in the mountains and in Carmel, for he loved the soil. So you get a picture of this guy. He's very well-rounded. He's a soldier, yes, but he's also, well, he's into husbandry, and he's into agriculture, and he's a builder, and he's into, well, fortifying the cities that he's building. In fact, preparing the army. In verses 11 through 13, it just talks about how he organized his army, mentions the scribes and officers and the captains over the 2,600 chief officers, the 300 plus 7,500 warriors. But it says he prepared for them, verse 14, and this is sort of the important part of that. He prepared for the entire army shields and spears and helmets and body armor and bows and slings to cast stones. It's a reminder of that passage that I was murdering a moment ago, where God talks about putting on the full armor of God. And having done all to stand, stand. And the point is, God has provided us with everything we need to succeed. And that's what Uzziah is doing here. He's got his army armored up. And they have every bit of the latest technology. And once more, he made devices, verse 15 in Jerusalem, invented by skillful men to be on the towers and the corners, to shoot arrows and large stones. So he's not just, you know, one guy, one bow. He's got really smart and skillful men, inventors, creating these things that can shoot multiple arrows at once. And of course, it's always dangerous to be below when huge boulders are falling, and you've seen it in the movies. Well, verse 15, and we read it, his fame spread far and wide, for he was marvelously helped till he became strong. But when he was strong, his heart was lifted up to his destruction, for he transgressed against the Lord by entering the temple of the Lord to burn incense on the altar of incense. We mentioned Samson. His problem was the girls. And then there was Judas. His problem was the gold. Uzziah, it's the glory. In fact, years ago, I heard Billy Graham speak, and he warned about these three things. He warned, saying, lots of guys have been taken down by one of the three, the girls, the gold, or the glory. So watch out for all three. The great temptation for him as he was succeeding and people were starting to speak well of him and highly of him, it was pride. It's the same sin that took Satan down. Satan, by the way, if you're unaware, created by God and for God, and for a season, he was faithful to serve and worship God. Ezekiel 28, verses 12 through 17, calls him the seal of perfection. It says he was full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. He was in Eden, the garden of God. He was a worshiper, and some suggest a worship leader. God created this beautiful creature to worship and honor and serve him, and he did for a season. How long? We don't know, but we do know the rest of the story. Isaiah tells us in Isaiah 14, 12 through 15, that having had his heart lifted up, he began to say, I will, and I will, and I will. Not your will, but my will be done. And so, by the way, Ezekiel 28 goes on to talk how his heart was lifted up. And in the same exact scenario, they're fleshed out in two different ways. It's easy to remember Isaiah 14, Ezekiel 28. I started this time with Ezekiel, but you should be familiar with both, because there's a wealth of insight when we look at what happened to this worshiper that was there in the very garden of Eden with the Lord. Well, Peter fell because of pride. You remember, even if all flake out, Lord, I'll never forsake you. Paul had the same kind of blindness. He was blinded by his pride, thought that he was serving God when he persecuted God's people. The Pharisees were blinded by pride, thinking they were the chosen ones. And so, you know, what do we need these Gentiles for? And that's really what we're going to be looking at in some detail this weekend, this amazing picture of the grace of God and the foolish attempt by those who had grown up under the law to say, no, you need to be into the law. Oh, Jesus is awesome and the grace is good, but the law, that's where it's really at. They were blinded by pride. And here we see it. Prosperity can lead to pride. Pride to presumption. And it might be why Proverbs 30 verse 7 says, give me neither poverty nor riches. Give me that which you've prescribed for me. Give me what's perfect, Lord, for me. Well, in any case, Azariah the priest went in after him. And with him there were 80 priests of the Lord, valiant men. And they withstood King Uzziah and said to him, it is not for you, Uzziah, to burn incense to the Lord, but for the priest, the sons of Aaron, who are consecrated to burn incense. Get out of the sanctuary, for you have trespassed. You shall have no honor from the Lord God. Now you have to appreciate this priest. Because it's not just coming in and warning the guy. He's actually telling him to get out, to stop right now. And it's the king he's talking to. But the king is wrong. He's taken it upon himself to occupy the office of the priest, to do the ministry of one that God had set apart. And that wasn't his part. His part was to govern the nation, to build the armories, to care for his people and provide for them, to prepare them for battle and lead them into battle. And now he's encroaching on the office of the priest. And the true priest comes and rebukes him for it. But he's unrepentant. And instantly, God's judgment falls on him. Uzziah became, verse 19, furious. And he had a censer in his hand to burn incense. And while he was angry with the priest, leprosy broke out on his forehead before the priest and the house of the Lord beside the incense altar. Now, before we look at the outcome of this and conclude, just know, if you're unfamiliar, no disease in that day was more dreaded than leprosy. And we're not talking about, well, Hansen's disease today. We're talking about something that was highly contagious and very threatening. In fact, leprosy is a unique among all the diseases and that it gives us a perfect picture outwardly of what God was able to see inwardly. You see, outwardly, this king looked really good. He was someone who, for the most part, except for this couple instances, and I'm sure there were others, but for the most part, people would have looked at him and said, here's a guy serving the Lord. Here's a guy prospering because he's serving the Lord. Here's a guy the Lord is with and for. But inwardly, God saw corruption, decay, sin, pride, arrogance. And what God does is he puts on the outside what he was seeing on the inside. Leprosy, by the way, one of the worst of all diseases of all time. I don't know if you've seen the pictures of lepers or leper colonies, but you see them and their fingers are worn down to just nubs, or their nose will be worn off, or other parts are just disfigured. It's a disfiguring, not just defiling disease. Defiling in that, well, you were excluded from fellowship with anyone except other lepers. It's a perfect picture of sin. But not just defiling, it again, disfigured. And the irony of the disfigurement, if irony is probably not the right word, is what happens is that they would lose sensitivity in their extremities. So a leper could stick his hand into the fire and he wouldn't know that he was burning his hand until he smelled the searing flesh. And then he'd be like, oh my gosh, you know, what have I done? Still no pain though. And if you've ever, well, as many of us are and will, if you've ever suffered physically with pain and wondered, oh, why does God allow pain? Hey, pain can be a very good thing. It is a gift from God. If you didn't feel pain, you would be hurting yourself constantly. So it's, you know, I have two grandsons. You know this, most of you, not all of you. My older grandson, he's the kid that crawled under the piano, lifted up, hit his head one time, backed out, never did it again. My younger grandson, Luke, well, he's another story altogether. He crawls under the piano, he bumps his head, he goes down. He bumps his head again, he goes down. You go for him to get him out, he bumps his head as you're trying to pull him out. Then when you get him away from the piano, he crawls straight back under it just to repeat the experiment. Now, I have no idea how these two kids could be so different or why they are. But apparently, Luke's got a very hard head and or enjoys banging into my piano. Maybe he's hearing something, you know, that I don't hear. But the point is, the pain is there to keep us from hurting ourselves or making it worse. And so this guy now defiled. That means he's no longer going to be in the palace. He's not going to be ruling. He's not going to be reigning. He's not going to be fellowshipping. He's not going to be worshiping. Oh, he could do all that somewhere, but not with people who aren't lepers. And that's the majority of people at that time. So leprosy broke out on his forehead. And Azariah, verse 20, and the chief priest and the priest looked at him. And there on his forehead, he was leprous. So they thrust him out of that place and indeed also hurried to get out because the Lord had struck him. They wanted him out and then they wanted out because they know they got to go clean this place really good and really fast, lest any of them find themselves suffering as well. Well, King Uzziah, we read, was a leper until the day of his death. He dwelt in an isolated house. I mentioned that leprosy is an apt and actually very clear picture of sin and what it does. It numbs us to the things that actually harm us. And then it begins not just to, well, numb us inwardly, but to show up in our outward actions. It separates us from other people as he's separated here. It begins to disfigure us. I don't know if you saw those ads when they first went from promoting cigarettes on TV, which back in when I was a kid, I mean, all of that people on TV and the movie stars, they all smoked and they did commercials for smoking. And then they decided, hey, a lot of people are dying from this. Maybe it's not a good idea to advertise it as a good thing. And so they went to the utmost extreme and they had these posters that said like smoking is very glamorous and you saw the most hideous creature you've ever seen. Now somewhere between those two, there are billions of people smoking. But the deal is, whether it looks good or looks horrible, this guy had already turned his back on the Lord, was already filled with pride and arrogance. And so now he's isolated. Now he's defiled. Now the leprosy is obvious to all. The sin is obvious to all. He dwelt in an isolated house because he was a leper, cut off from the house of the Lord. And that had to be the worst of it. He couldn't go in and offer a sacrifice. He couldn't go in and worship the Lord. He couldn't go in and participate with the others. So Jotham, his son, was over the king's house, judging the people of the land. Last couple of verses just tell us, hey, you want to know more about him? Isaiah wrote of him. And like those who ruled before him, he died, he was buried, and his son reigned in his place, and that will be our study next time. Lord, we